Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today's Issues. Just going to go ahead and warn you that I don't know about the attitude here in the studio this morning because our popcorn machine has not been returned.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, it's not really ours, but the one that the church loaned us for most of the year, they've taken for
Reformation Day.
A Reformation Day party.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that we had grown accustomed to having our Obama corn available to us.
That's right.
Free. And this is day two.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's day two. I walked by there this morning and my soul sort of shrunk when I saw that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Your heart sinks.
I would say the word despondent comes to mind. You know what I'm saying?
Now, Tim, is it true that you've asked this church to move up the Reformation Day celebration a couple of days?
All I'm saying is have it on the weekend.
Yes, when we're not here.
When we're not here.
Have some respect.
Leave the popcorn machine that you gave us alone. Okay. Tim Wildman here with Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson. We thank you for listening to AFR. And if you want to join us via the internet, Ed, how can they do that?
Well, Tim, I'm glad you asked. They can simply go to Facebook or YouTube, search for Today's Issues, and click through, and they can watch us.
Is that easy?
It's that easy. It is that easy and simple.
And you can also go to, you can retrieve the app, if you will, download it, and listen anywhere in the world to American Family Radio, where you have high-speed internet access, obviously. But we have tens of thousands of people who are taking advantage of the app now. Just go to your iPad or your iPhone or your other kind of device, and whatever the word is for that, just download the app, and you can listen there to AFR anywhere. And we thank everybody who's helping us spread the word there about the app.
The app's catching on. We get lots of word.
Well, during our share-a-thon, a couple weeks back, we started noticing a lot of donations coming in from people who don't get our radio stations.
Right.
I'm talking about our terrestrial radio stations, conventional, the tower.
Right.
And everything like that. These were folks outside of that area, and that was exciting for us to see that our app was, being used so widespread. All right, you are listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We will have Abraham Hamilton III on at the bottom of the hour. Abe is a constitutional attorney, and he's also host of the Hamilton Corner here on AFR, and we have him on Wednesdays to talk about legal things in the news. Good morning, Fred, again, and what do you got for us?
Well, I'll tell you what, what's called the Nation's Report Card is out this morning. And this is the annual National Assessment of Education Progress in this country.
Okay, who provides this information?
That is the group that does it. And they survey 600,000 students.
You mean that's the name of the group that does it? Okay.
They survey 600,000 students to look at particular reading and math scores. And the report card is not good. Not good at all.
How many did they survey them?
600,000 students.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Public schools across the country. It says public schools and Catholic schools.
Okay.
And I think Catholic schools usually use the public school curriculum.
Okay.
Many Catholic schools.
Okay.
Do.
You're looking at me. I don't.
Well, you went to Catholic school, right?
I did, but I graduated in 1976. I don't know what they're doing.
when the scores were really good.
That's right. When they were up there, that's when I was going.
It says here, most notable were the score drops in reading, which occurred in 17 states with regard to fourth grade reading scores and 31 states for eighth grade reading scores. On average, reading scores declined for fourth graders by 1 point and for eighth graders by 3 points compared to 2017. What does all that mean? It means that despite the fact that in many districts across the country, they're getting more and more money, kids all the way through eighth grade, they're showing a decline in their abilities to do basic math and to read. Now, when I saw this a few minutes ago coming in, I was immediately started connecting it to the story we talked about yesterday on this program with regards to the use of social media. Remember we talked about that?
Yes.
Kids 8 years old up until I think 12 or so, spending 4.5 hours a day, and kids, you know, 13 up to 18, 7.5 hours a day.
Yes.
Watching videos. And we wanted to stress that it was watching videos.
And that doesn't include other stuff they might be doing, texting or whatever.
Texting or whatever. And so I have to wonder if a kid is spending 7.5 hours a day just entertaining themselves, watching videos, is it any surprise that math and reading scores are going to go down? That's kind of one thought in all of this. But also, taxpayers invest a whole lot of money in education. I heard once where 60% of taxes go to the education systems in our country. So what's going on here? And they talk about, you know, often you hear, well, it's, you know, in poorer neighborhoods, the scores are lower. But this appears to be across the board, whether it's a wealthy neighborhood or a poorer neighborhood, that these scores are all declining. They said from 1990 up to 2015, the scores have been pretty good. But starting then, the scores have gone down significantly over time. They've noticed a real change from 1990 onwards. And I have to say, you know, during the Obama years, maybe the focus was on what kids should be eating in the cafeteria and not so much on reading and writing and mathematics.
So, yeah, I'll say this too, that I've read. Now, we didn't talk about this yesterday. We talked about the social media YouTube study. But my understanding from reading over the last half dozen years is that young people who spend a lot of time doing social media are having a harder time concentrating for longer periods of time. Their attention span is shrinking.
Mm.
And so I would have to, that's just, I think, just part of the equation. If you're spending a lot of time watching video clips, where if there's anything, any solid issue being discussed, it's being discussed in little sound bites, that young people are increasingly incapable of deep thinking or, you know, prolonged concentration. Mm-hmm. And I know it may sound like I'm just, you know, just another old dude, you know, saying, well, back when I was a kid, you know, mm-hmm. we didn't, you know, there is a tendency for folks to do that and about the younger right. generation and, hey, you kids, get off my grass. But I do think that the habits with regards to social media and entertainment are degrading the capacity. Look, we've all noted that a lot of young people who, for example, are in favor of socialism, you ask them a couple questions and whatever they know, it's an inch deep.
Mm-hmm.
They know nothing about, very little about history and mm-hmm. economics or political systems. So mm-hmm. I don't know. That's my take on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the interesting thing is the drop, like from grade 4 to grade 8. Grade 8, they're not progressing at all, it seems, in this. So I ask the question, how are they passing grade 4 and grade 5 and grade 6, grade 7, and they get to grade 8 and their reading basically isn't much better than what they were in grade 4. So that speaks to another problem. We're just pushing these students along.
Right.
Then how are they getting into university if they're failing in the areas of math and reading?
Now, we've all seen the studies and heard the complaints from professors who are saying these kids almost all need remedial education mm-hmm. because they can't read at you know, level X or whatever. They have very little background knowledge, don't know how to write papers. So this is a.
Are you guys talking about? Just so I understand here, are you guys talking about a national problem we have with
yes.
with high school age or junior high?
Well, it's grade reflected from grade 4 on up.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't have anything recent in terms of what professors are saying. I just know that I'm constantly reading over the last 10 years where they're saying many of these young people who come out of high school, who graduate, have to take remedial education in order to take freshman classes in college.
Well, I agree. There's various reasons and a number of reasons why these test scores are down. You cited some of them. Ed has too. I think ultimately it's the parents' responsibility to make sure their child is getting the best education that they can get. You know, whatever that may look like for people, homeschool, Christian school, private school. They have other alternatives. Some people have good public high schools or public schools in their community. That's for each person to decide themselves. But whatever route you take to educate your children, it's on you, you know, ultimately.
Yeah.
So I would be concerned, very worried if my children were going to failing schools.
Absolutely.
Which were not, and you better find out how they test.
Yeah.
You know, how those schools test. Now, secondly, a lot of this has to do with your home life.
Yes.
It's a responsibility of the parents ultimately to educate their children. This doesn't mean that I have to teach my kids biology. You know what I'm saying? But I have to make sure, however they learn it, that they learn.
That's right.
Biology. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is home life. Mm-hmm. There's so many divorce homes today.
Yes.
Single parent home situations. Mm-hmm. And that puts a lot of stress on that one single parent to, you know, you got two or three or four kids and you're trying to do homework every night with them and get them bathed and get them in bed and all that kind of stuff. So the stress that families are under today. And one other thing is what you talked about earlier, Fred. You add to that the attention span, and I think Ed's right, is just not there because these kids today, these younger folks, they're used to the multimedia. They're used to the social media. They're used to the internet. It's instantaneous gratification.
And move on to something else.
And entertainment's more attractive than doing algebra or doing social studies.
Here's something. I just got a text from someone who was a teacher. Okay, and this is what she says. Just to chime in on what you're discussing on the show, I couldn't give any student less than a 50. On any assignment because of the No Child Left Behind Act, they could turn in a blank test or assignment and they would get a 50.
Wow.
That's how students are passing when they should be held back.
That's dumbing them down.
Teachers have been fired or chosen to quit over that.
Are you not serious?
No, I'm serious.
And I'm not calling her a liar.
You know this person.
Okay, you telling me you get a 50 for signing your name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's... What's happening is, if that's the general approach, is we all know this, kids are getting pushed along, to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
They end up in 10th grade and they test out at a 6th grade level or something like that because you can't hold the whole class back.
Right.
Right. Huh? I mean, you can hold a few back, but you can't, if it becomes a math problem, you got to dumb down your expectation level, or either you're going to be stuck with log jammed with a bunch of kids that can't pass at all, which is a reflection on your school.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. I agree with you that the parents ultimately responsible, but parents, if they had the option of vouchers.
Oh yeah.
You know, and you saw how the education system has fought vouchers across the country. But if mom and dad were given the money that they pay into the tax system for the education of their kids, if mom and dad had the right to take that money and put it into a more rigorous school environment, they should have that right.
I don't know who can be opposed to that. Even if you send your children to public schools or you're a public school teacher, administrator, coaches, and there are a lot of wonderful Christians in that field, but I don't know why you would be opposed to allowing me the opportunity to use my tax dollars that would go to education in my state, to use that money to educate my own kids in a Christian school or a homeschooling environment.
Well, the threat that they throw out there is that you'll destroy the public school system. And then we
I'm not taking
have
money. How? How am I destroying?
If you had half the kids out of the public school system and they go to other options, homeschool or Christian schools or private schools, you will destroy that because you just think about it. How are we going to field a football team? How are we going to do this? How are we going to get? You see what I'm saying? And we'll lose teachers. Yeah. We'll have to let go teachers.
Ultimately, individual liberty matters more than those things.
But the formula to fund public schools is based on how many students are going to that.
Right. So if mine aren't going, I'm not costing you anything because they're not there to use up the money that I would give to educate them.
But the school district redirects the voucher money from the public pot to the parent. And so the teachers' unions have always fought this voucher system.
Yeah, but Tim's argument would make sense if all the money that your student, that you would get, if all that money was actually being used to educate your student that you're pulling out, your argument, I think, would be valid. But half of it is going to the bloated administration and bureaucracy of the public school
system. That's not my problem.
I know. Well, that's the counter argument to
then you
need to fire some of those people who are getting paid.
Yeah. Again, just to be clear, what I'm talking about is, as Fred said, Ed just said, so my child is not going to the public school system. Okay. So the money that I would otherwise pay, the percentage of my taxes that would go to pay for them to go to my local public school, and all my kids went to public schools. I'm not completely anti-public.
As did mine.
Yeah, I'm not completely anti-public school. Don't misunderstand me. But that was a few years ago. Things have changed. But I'm just saying that that if I withhold that money that would and use it to educate my children in another way, what do you care? By you, I mean anybody. You know, what does anybody care?
I would add to that, Tim, that it would cure a lot of the problems in the public school system.
Right.
If they were threatened with losing all that money.
Yeah.
So someone sent around a story this morning about the public schools in Austin, Texas, who are going to be teaching just very outlandish sex education stuff to kids starting in the third grade, promoting homosexuality and all those kinds of things. Third graders, the public came to the meetings, protested. The public school board said, "We don't care." Unanimous decision. Well, you threaten the Austin public school system with, fine, then a third of us are going somewhere else. They would go, oh, wait a second, maybe we can come to some sort of understanding.
Yeah.
So I think you would correct. You'd start to see bad teachers fired, whereas now, to Fred's point, the union will protect bad teachers as well as good ones.
Yeah. And one last thing about that, you're going to have to demonstrate to me as a parent that you're going to field a championship quality football team. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think that's very important to my kid's psyche.
Just tongue in cheek.
I'm just going to throw that in there. That's not as important as the academic standards, but it's right. It's 1A. You know what I'm saying? So next topic, Fred.
All right. Well, we're going to have.
I think I'm going to get some feedback from that one.
Yeah, I think if people think you're serious, though, you'll hear about it.
Well, football becomes especially important because now we're now agreeing to pay these football players in college.
Oh yeah, for their use of their.
Well, they're allowed to make money off their image.
Yes.
And
that's a story, and this is a segue into our next story because. And we're working on this in the newsroom, folks, is now that, remember the law that was passed in California back a few months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The law is out there that college football players, for instance, are now going to be able to make money.
Sign contracts. Any college athlete.
With Nike or with any of those. So,
By the way, let me just stop you right there for just a second. This is important because what California did affected the decision we're about to talk about from the NCAA. So when people hear about what wacky thing California's doing and they're saying, that's just that nutty left coast, what happens in California usually impacts the rest of the nation. So
to your point, the NCAA took the first step yesterday toward allowing amateur athletes to cash in on their fame voting unanimously to permit them to, quote, benefit from the use of their name, image, and likeness, end quote. And what does that mean? That if there's a star player and a big athletic wear company comes to them and says, we'd like to use your picture to kind of endorse our product, and you can make money off of this, Johnny. And we're, we're talking, what, 18-year-olds?
Yeah, that sort of thing? 18 to 22-year-olds. You know, I'm a big fan of college athletics, more so than professional sports. I don't see how this is not going to turn college sports, which is amateur, into professional sports.
Yes.
Right.
Right? I mean, what? You're going to have car dealerships.
Yes.
Hiring the quarterback or the running back or whatever from the college team, paying them. And then, I mean, this just opens up a...
This is horrific.
Yeah.
This is going to ruin college athletics. What's going to happen is you're going to have USC or you're going to have the University of Alabama say,
we'll pay more.
We know what you did in high school. We've got lined up for you 10 different
dealerships endorsements.
And that is human
nature. And
won't
you need an agent then?
Of course you.
And a lawyer?
You absolutely will.
What's the difference between that and the New England Patriots?
No, the only thing different is that the college itself won't actually be shelling out money.
Yes.
But they will be doing it through the back door.
Yep.
They'll be going to all the people, all the alumni that own businesses, say, yeah, if we can get that blue chip quarterback.
I know.
This is crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's not up there with, you know, ISIS or, you know, nuclear war.
Right. But
this is a further evidence of the fact that the country's lost.
I agree with you.
It's not just compass. Football.
Oh, no, totally.
It's going to be baseball. Yeah, it's going to be girls' soccer team.
Right.
Right across the board.
I eat Frosted Flakes.
Right, yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah.
Right. And most of it will be done by, you know, businesses in the towns or surrounding areas or the states of those colleges and universities where a athlete gains prominence, you know.
Right.
And I could see that creating some jealousy, too, among people on, you know, we block for you, man.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's right.
We block for you, and you're making $100,000.
And if you're not sharing it, maybe you'll get sacked a couple times. You'll lose the Heisman Trophy.
Well, why wouldn't people think like that?
Of course they're going to think that. Yeah. There doesn't seem to be any moral courage anymore. What the NCAA should have said to California is, fine, you want to pass that law? Your schools in California are no longer a part of the NCAA.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Should have played hardball with California.
And they should have said to California, we already have this. It's called professional sports.
Yes.
If the kids want to play professional sports, they're free to go do that.
We will strip your schools of their NCAA eligibility if you pass that.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's going to – I agree
insanity.
With you. Yeah. All right. And it came along a little too late for us. Yeah,
somebody
take advantage of.
Somebody on Facebook said, this is John, wouldn't the scholarship become taxable income? What do you do with all that?
There's already a threat of that.
Taxable income. Of course it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about that because that's a value of thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, the scholarships that the athletes get to play the sport.
David says Lucky Charms is better than Frosted Flakes. David, we're going to have to agree to disagree on that, although Lucky Charms is pretty good.
Well, you know, honey cornflakes went away about 15 years ago. And
so this was a sad day, Tim.
I remember where I was in the grocery store when I realized that happened. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III of the Hamilton Corner.
You can follow the Hamilton Corner at Hamilton Corner on Twitter, or you can also listen live on the AFR app. This is one of the most amazing features that are available to you. I always say you can put Hamilton in your corner, wherever that corner may be.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Here are Tim and Riley Wildman for the AFA Foundation.
Riley, what is your title?
The director of AFA Foundation.
One of the best ways you can have income for the rest of your life and know that you will be supporting the ministry of American Family Association is to...
to give a gift to American Family Association and American Family Radio.
Do you also deal with people who want to leave AFA in their wills?
Yes, sir. That's exactly why they call. And that's why we also have another option besides a charitable gift annuity. People sometimes also call and do an outright gift or also leave us in their will.
Now, when anyone calls in and asks to talk to you ladies, will all of them talk in a Southern accent like you do?
Yes, they will.
Call Riley Wildman at the AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit afafoundation.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu.
Francine Rivers is one of the most beloved Christian romance novelists in the world, but it's something Miss Rivers wrote about her home state that has folks talking across the fruited plain. Miss Rivers is a native Californian. The other day she penned a blog lamenting the current plight of the Golden State. She said several couples in her Bible study group had moved away, looking for relief from the state's high taxes, a surging homeless population, and lawless sanctuary cities. Miss Rivers pointed out there was a time when California had the best education system in the nation, when there was no homeless crisis, when families felt safe. But now she and her husband are facing a decision to stay or to leave. Miss Rivers said it seems a grievous and unfair situation when people who pour their lives and tax dollars into California can no longer afford to stay there. Soon, the only folks left will be Democrats and illegal aliens. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson. If you would like to watch this here show, as Ed would say, on that there internet,
that there
you can go to YouTube or Facebook and just type in Today's Issues, and you can watch the show there. And Brent Creeley, our producer, also post the stories that we discuss so you can see them for yourself. We want to welcome Abraham Hamilton III to the program. Abe, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Saw your wife and kids last night at the Taekwondo.
She told me.
Facility.
I was there. What were you doing?
I'm an instructor.
Oh. Okay. Hiya.
Hiya. Hey, I'm 56, but I can get it out there on the karate floor, man.
When we're done here, I want to see you kick the ceiling.
And we'll come visit you.
Yeah. That's right. I'll bring you a box of chocolates while you're in the hospital.
Duly noted, Fred. It's all I can do to swing a golf club. Right today, I'm not exactly Mr. Limber. Hey, I wanted to ask you, before we jump into these topics that you're aware of us talking to you about, I have, as usual, Tim will spring something on you here.
Yes.
I'm just curious. Kanye West is probably the, for those who don't follow music that closely, or at least hip-hop music, he's kind of the Elvis Presley of hip-hop music, right?
Rap. I would say he's one of the most popular and one of the most talented producers ever. His rapping,
you know, whatever. But he's very popular, extremely influential.
Okay. But, I mean, okay, but if you had a Mount Rushmore of hip-hop slash rap music, wouldn't Kanye West be on there? Not you personally.
Okay, yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And he recognized.
In some people's views,
okay,
certainly.
You got your favorites, but give the guy his due
in
that field, right? Now, I know the vast majority of our folks listening to us right now do not listen to rap music or hip-hop music very much, but they've heard the name Kanye West because he, like Tiger Woods in golf, he transcends his music and has become a very public figure.
He's also a fashion designer. He designs shoes for
He's also a magazine.
As am I.
He's also
I'm a fashion designer.
Are you really?
Yeah.
But you're aspiring.
Yes.
I don't think.
Perspiring, mostly.
Perspiring.
Sometimes aspiring.
Some would say spiraling.
Yeah.
Downward.
I don't know that he ever got to the point where.
This abuse.
I don't know that he ever got to the point where he could spiral. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
But I mean, look, what do we got going on today? A black plaid shirt.
That's because tonight at church.
Oh,
my wife and I are manning a tent
that's
got a country theme. So
okay.
I've got jeans that I'm going to put on and a red bandana, and that's as country as I get with a plaid shirt.
You're going to be Johnny Cash? Who are you tonight?
I'm
going to be there. I'm going to see. I'll take
Johnny
a video
country.
Of you.
I'm Johnny Country. I don't have cowboy boots. I'm going to have a red bandana.
Okay.
That's it.
Once again, it's left for me to reel this show back in.
Yes, you've been the voice of reason.
Okay.
Abe's over there.
So, Abe.
He's ordering lunch.
Abe's okay. Hey, so on a serious note, so Kanye West has been in the news the last year or so about his conversion to Christianity. Is that what you would call it?
This conversation is about Christianity. I wouldn't say it's been a whole year. It's been a few months.
Okay,
but he's been in
months.
The news for his support for President Trump and some other things he said and other things.
Yeah.
But this outward discussion of him being a born-again Christian is relatively recent.
Okay. This is big news in the mass media world.
Yeah, or
pop culture world, because here you have a guy and he's talking about Jesus Christ. He's talking about, and when I started hearing about this, and he's holding these Sunday services around the country, and when I started hearing about this, I said to myself, I've seen this movie before.
Mm-hmm.
A celebrity, quote, comes to Jesus,
right,
and they start talking about God, and then the pressure gets on them.
They get some pushback
to talk about theology and sin and repentance and those things that are basic.
Sexuality.
Those things that are basic to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't act like they have a clue, or either they revert to, well, I believe all roads lead to God, sort of an Oprah Winfrey view, because that's not, you can't criticize that. You see what I'm saying? So I've been watching Kanye West and listening to people who, like his music and follow him, and who are solid Christians, and they're saying that this is seeming more and more like it, that Kanye West has had a genuine conversion to Christ.
Yeah, I'm always of the opinion that we should be very cautious and never rush into either affirm or to discredit, especially when we have somebody who is as popular and as public as this guy is. I mean, you think about, I speak for myself, when I was born again, I'm grateful that my processes of being born again wasn't on television for all the world to see when I was a baby Christian.
Yeah.
And I'm of the mindset, and I mentioned this very briefly yesterday on the radio, very briefly, that I think those who are quick to discredit what may be happening with Kanye West, I think they may need to relax a little bit. And I think those who are too quick to affirm what's happening with Kanye West may need to relax a little bit. And I'll tell you why I'm saying that. After Saul of Tarsus was converted, you know, and the Lord, not just some person, not paparazzi, the Lord told Ananias, hey, I want you to pray for this guy. Ananias said to the Lord, you sure, Lord? I mean, You sure you know? I mean, this is Saul. You sure you want me to break? And the Lord in the scripture does not rebuke Ananias for that. Mm. His caution was merited. Conversely, those who are pharisaically quick to condemn the fact that, you know, the Lord can take a Saul of Tarsus and make him Paul the apostle, they need to take two chill pills and relax as well. And so the reasons you just stated, when you have somebody as public as this guy is, and as these things are happening, he's going to make mistakes. He's going to say things that are not necessarily biblically orthodox, but that doesn't mean that the Lord isn't doing something in his heart, doing something in his
life.
That's
a good point.
And then conversely, my biggest concern are from, professing Christians and pastors like Jamal Bryan and others who are quick to exploit what's happening with Kanye West and to put him on a platform. I mean, the Bible gives us explicit instructions to lay hands on no man suddenly, that a neophyte in the faith should not be elevated to positions of prominence and influence within the body of Christ for sound reasons, first and foremost for that individual's sake. Yes. So that if and when they have difficulty, they're not, you know, they don't crumble under the weight of that difficulty, and to protect the body of Christ from prematurely, you know, seeing someone because of their popularity and ascribing merit to them solely based on their popularity, not because of the spiritual virtues and the things that are necessary for believers. And so I would urge caution all the way around and to pray not just for Kanye West, but for all new converts.
Yes.
Mm. We need to give this guy his own show. Yes. Abraham the third.
Isn't one of the challenges for him going to be, though, he's married to Kim Kardashian.
Right. And some of that has come out. I mean, there's been a very public spat he had with his wife about a particular dress she wore. Mm. You know, the Bible talks about modesty. Well, she's pretty famous for her immodesty.
Yeah. Right.
And he married her in her immodesty. And so
he married her when he was not born again.
Yes.
So
so we need to be praying for him.
Yes.
Because he is in very difficult. If he's truly been converted, he's in very difficult circumstances. And the devil would love to slap him down.
That's right.
Yeah, because wasn't a lot of his music vulgar?
All of his music has been vulgar to this point. I mean, not just vulgar, but even blasphemous. He had an entire album calling himself Yeezus. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so that's why I'm saying that there's plenty of evidence that would warrant an Ananias being, whoa, wait a minute, let's not be too quick to rush to judgment. And one of the things that I think has been exposed in this is our idolatry for celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, things are being discussed, conversations are being engaged in solely because of who this guy is, not about what may or may not be happening in his life and in his heart. And I think that is a rebuke, really, frankly, for the church across the board, that some people are talking about, we need to pray for new believers. And it's only because he's Kanye West.
It's partiality. It's no different than giving a rich person the front row in the church.
Exactly.
But at the same time, we have to acknowledge this guy is a celebrity. He's a popular figure, and we want to watch and see.
I'm just saying to Abe's point, our tendencies always to say, "Oh, you're special, you're rich, or you're famous. We want to bring you up front."
You.
And what happens is, a rebuke to us, and it can cause the possible downfall of someone who may really be making strides towards
Jesus.
That's
what happened with B.J. Thomas. That name, most baby boomers recognize that name. He was a very popular singer back in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Remember that? Thomas, yeah.
I mean, that was his probably number one hit. But he got saved during the middle of his, if I got the story right, and hope I do, during the middle of his fame, right? And so he talked about, you know, giving his life to Jesus Christ. Hmm. But then like the television preachers wanted him to come on and break down the book of Revelation for him.
Right.
You know, after 2 months.
I mean, because his name's a big draw.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Wow, let's go hear B.J. Thomas.
Exploiting him.
Yeah.
Right, and he was exploited.
Yeah. Bob Dylan.
Same type thing.
And
sometimes what we see happen when these celebrities get this attention for their conversion, then they fall back. I don't know what you want to call that in your theological terms, but they become inconsistent. They
backslide. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, they waffle because they're not solidly grounded in the faith yet.
They're babes.
To Abe's point earlier, so let's. I think Abe's wise, let's wait and see what happens and pray for Kanye West, because if it's a genuine, true conversion, you know, he could reach a lot of young people, younger people. He's probably in his late 30s,
early. He's 42.
Okay, there you go. So, but still, if the world sees a genuine conversion to Christ with this guy, where he went from being a vulgar, blasphemous rapper to being a man after God's own heart, to borrow from David.
Right.
But, I mean, really.
Yeah.
And he, by the way, at these services, let's bring Wesley Wildman into this. Good morning, Wesley.
Hey, I'm glad to be here.
I know you're here to talk about another topic, but you hear what we're talking about?
Yeah, I've been following this as well. You know, I was thinking last night, my wife, Chelsea, who has seen the whole listened off and on the entire two-hour interview on iTunes, she's listened the whole thing of Kanye West.
So iTunes aired a two-hour interview with him?
Yeah.
Got a lot of them out there.
And there's a lot of them out there, but this one was a two-hour deal with one of the executive directors at Apple, I guess. I'm not sure. But she listened to the interview, and she was giving me – she was pausing every 3 minutes. She was like, listen to this.
Right.
Like, listen to this. Like, you can't –
you mean like listen to what Kanye West is saying in response, which was good, was biblical?
Yes, it was biblical. Just a surprise to what was
taken. I mean, he's come out against pornography.
Yes.
He's come out against abortion. He's come out again.
Yeah. No, he said pornography had a detrimental
effect on him.
Yeah,
I mean, he said his dad used to leave Playboy magazines out.
Yeah,
and at 5 years old,
5 years old, he came across it. He was in bondage for his whole life. He said everything he had done prior to being born again had been affected by pornography.
But when we were talking about this last night, what struck me in our conversation back and forth over about a 30-minute span, I was like, "Wow, what if?" Kanye West, God using him, which he would tell you in his interview, you know, this is God's grace and his forgiveness in my life. This is all about him and his glory. If God went through Kanye West to bring about a spiritual awakening in America.
Yeah.
I mean, just to think that, because, and I say that because of his influence on the biggest voting bloc, the millennials, the generation.
Well, look at Fred, you feel free to freestyle rap whenever you want to.
At any point.
Okay, because I see it in your eyes.
I don't even know what that is.
No.
Wait a minute. We have a couple staff members.
If you watch carefully, I can do it on ice skates.
You can look at me and see that I'm country, so what do I know about rap?
So, you know, that's, you see where, you know, as we mentioned here before, and Ed was talking about this earlier, God is no respecter of persons.
Sure.
God doesn't care how much money or fame Kanye West has, or Elvis Presley had, or
whoever
Donald
Trump has. That means nothing to God Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
Zero.
Yeah.
My dad used to say in one of his sermons, my dad used to say, God cares as much about the ditch digger as he does the president of the United States of
America.
That's
true. Right.
Okay, so it that's irrelevant to God in terms of each individual soul being valuable to the Lord. But at the same time, there's a mass of humanity out there that will listen to celebrities.
Sure.
Whether it's you know,
athlete
Tony Dungy,
right,
or Albert Pujols.
Yep.
Or there's all kind of names that.
And what's been the most surprising to me is to see the fact of his. Now this is the early stages of his biblical application to
Kanye West.
Kanye West's biblical application to the issues of the day is interesting too, because you do have. And I'm not talking about just Tony Dungy or Albert Rose, which those are great people, but you do have a swath of celebrity Christians who don't get involved or wouldn't say anything like that because
they don't want to be controversial.
They don't want to be controversial. They don't want to be.
So he doesn't seem to care whether he's controversial.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be. They don't want to be associated with the bigots or the haters. And they're out there. We know them, you know. In the first couple months right now, it doesn't seem like he can. He abortion's wrong, abortion's wrong, abortion's wrong.
that's
what it seems.
That's counter Hollywood entertainment industry.
Right.
And he's also to talk about the negative impact that pornography had on his life.
Yeah.
That's a very vulnerable person who is being real about his sin. But he supposedly has a pastor who comes to these services that he's holding around the country, who is a evangelical.
Yeah, Adam Tyson.
I think you know him?
I don't know him personally. I know a little bit about him, and he has initially the Sunday services didn't include any preaching, and then he was confronted about that. He said, "We need to have the gospel preached." And so he
Kanye West said that?
Well, he was actually his dad told him he needed to have the gospel preached. And this pastor was the one who initially started ministering to Kanye West in California. Kanye West moved to the middle of the country, I believe it's Wyoming. And this pastor,
my ranch is by his.
From what I understand, this pastor flies Kanye West flies him out every week.
Yeah.
To do several hours of Bible study every week.
Yeah.
And this pastor now preaches the gospel at all of his Sunday services around the country.
Is his dad a Christian? Kanye West?
I don't know.
But you know what you don't want to see happen is, and I hope and pray that this doesn't happen. But what we've seen happen with Christian celebrities before is they seem to be infatuated with the Bible and the gospel and Christianity for a season.
Yeah.
And then they get bored with it or they get tired of the attacks from the world or they want to go back to their sin.
Yeah.
Right.
And they ditch it. To answer your question, my wife did say that he said in there, I don't know his family tree line. I don't know if his parents have been split up or not. I don't know the tree line, but he said, my parents have prayed for me and continue to minister to me even when I was, put my thumb up and God, or you know, turning their nose up in God's face. And his point to referencing that is to not give up on somebody, to always be praying for somebody and ministering, because he said you never know at what point it's going to click like it did in my life. Yeah. So his mom did have an influence on praying over him, telling him you need to be in church.
Yeah. You know?
Well, he doesn't seem to be too fearful of the world's criticism when it came to politics, because. Because he supported President Trump
at least
for a while or you know, or a lot of what President Trump was trying to do he agreed with, like any president who agrees with every single thing everybody does, but he was not afraid to get beat up unmercifully by the Hollywood industry, entertainment industry, when he did take a position of supporting President Trump.
He's beginning to see how inclusive and how tolerant they are.
Yeah. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Fred's here with Ed and Abe, and I'm Tim. Wesley, you're here to talk about the
Orange Letter Campaign.
Okay, tell people what that is and why they should participate.
Okay, so the Orange Letter Campaign is an effort that is coordinated and spearheaded by EngageMagazine.net, which is the division under AFA and which reaches young adults and college students. And it's the effort in which we do annually to remember those that are on the mission field across the world. So Christian,
Why the orange?
4 years ago, 21 Coptic Christians were murdered on a beach in Libya, that's correct. And as a result of that, we were inspired.
And they were in orange jumpsuits.
Yeah, they were in orange jumpsuits. And so we began the Orange Letter Campaign because we collected 2,000 letters of encouragement, and we hand-delivered those to the families of the 21 Christians that were murdered.
And those families were in Egypt.
They were in Egypt. And so we delivered those to their family.
Right.
And it was we had such a good feedback from that one-time effort that we wanted to make it an annual thing. Around November is where we begin collecting letters and then we bounced around. We've been to North Korea. We've dropped some in there. We've been to Africa. So we've been to a couple different locations. And this year we're partnering with Global Outreach, which is a local ministry here, and our headquarters, Tupelo, Mississippi, and they're going to make sure that these words of encouragement to missionaries will be inserted with the Christmas card as a reminder to them that we're thinking about them, we care about them, because that Global Outreach has done a lot with missionaries across the world.
They have hundreds.
Hundreds, yeah.
Missionaries on
several
the field.
Several hundred. And they can see on a daily basis, even on a monthly basis, how it's so easy, it's just part of nature how they get forgotten about. You know, when you leave the country,
out of sight, out of mind.
It happens. And so this is our effort to say, we were thinking about you at this particular day, and we're encouraged by you, by you fulfilling what God's called you to do and being faithful in what God's called you to do in other parts of the world as they share the gospel.
So you're asking our listeners to write one letter?
Yes, one letter. We try to keep it around 200 words. So 200 to 300 words, and you can type it out, and you can send it in an email form to orange@afa.net. That's orange@afa.net. Send us an email, words of encouragement. Keep it brief, 200 words. We will have that translated onto a card and hand-delivered to missionaries all around the world.
Okay. Will it be personalized at all, or...
For the person that's writing it? Is that what you're saying?
If I'm going to go in and type this email to this address, what's the address?
It's orange@afa.net.
Okay. So you're saying whatever I type is going to go around the world to a missionary.
A missionary.
And their family.
That's right.
Serving somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Global Outreach International, which is, as you say, they're based here near us. They have these hundreds of missionaries, so y'all going to spread those letters out among those.
That's right. And we have a handful. If it's not up now, it's part of the plan of this week to have them up. Each week at EngageMagazine.net, we drop a new article and a new video and new content to remind us. And so you can go to EngageMagazine.net and find out more. There'll be some videos of some of the missionaries that will be receiving these.
Where can I go watch this?
EngageMagazine.net. We'll have some of the videos up, and you can see the missionaries that will be receiving this. And it will inspire you to make this a part of their Christmas gift as they sit down around Christmas time. They can read these words of encouragement from us in America.
Amen. Thank you, Wesley.
Thank y'all.
Appreciate it. That's Wesley Wildman. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Did you have? We got about 2 minutes left here.
They're going to
make
vote
it good for
in
it.
The House tomorrow. They're going to vote on a resolution. This is all towards the impeachment inquiry that the Democrats are running. And I can't underscore that anymore. The Democrats are running this. Now, this resolution, Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, what have you to believe, it's going to be open. The Republicans are going to be happy. Abe, your response.
Well, first of all, this is the Democrats in the House's response to a resolution that was drafted by Lindsey Graham in the Senate. I don't know if y'all already discussed that. But Senator Lindsey Graham drafted a resolution which has now gotten the co-sponsorship of Mitch McConnell and 50 other U.S. senators. So this is going to pass in the Senate that literally says, and I'll just translate this into layman's terms, if you guys send trash over to the Senate that's not the product of a process that includes fairness and due process, we won't even hear it. Mm. And so Lindsey Graham drafted that resolution on Monday. So surprisingly, not so surprisingly, Nancy Pelosi drafts a resolution on Tuesday, which, I mean, throw out of the window the fact that in order for resolutions to pass, the House has a rule that the legislation has to be posted 72 hours prior to a vote. But throw that out of the window. She's responding to a little bit of pressure, not a whole lot, but a little bit of pressure provided by the U.S. Senate. And I said yesterday, we don't have time to describe this, but this is providing some type of formal imprimatur for a process that's going to continue in pretty much the same fashion.
Yes.
Not much is going to change. It is just her realizing, well, we have to do something because the Senate has now called our bluff in the way that we conducted this impeachment inquiry. And I found it interesting that Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, her number two in the House, have bent over backwards to say, this is not an impeachment vote. This is not an impeachment vote.
Yeah. Thank you, Abe. Appreciate it. Abraham Hamilton this afternoon, Hamilton Corner.
Yes, 5:05 p.m. Central. Be there.
Okay. He actually does have a show, folks.
Yeah, this afternoon. Yeah. Join him weekday afternoons. Fred, appreciate it.
You bet.
Ed and I shall return with Steve Jordahl in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. You're listening to American Family Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.